My teaching assistant is now in New Zealand, and we knew he was going to have to do that. for this most recent study guide, it's the last study guide on Locke, he asked me if it would be okay if he sidesteps making comments on graded work on this assignment in order to catch up with his own studies in New Zealand, and I said, sure, that's fine, but be sure to upload to each student the answer sheet so they can look at what they got, and then and they'll know based on points taken off where there might have been some problems. If you have any questions, about why you got whatever grade you got on that study guide once it's returned to you, just approach me. Send me an email and I'll answer any questions you have, okay? Or reserve your questions for Friday when we do our midterm exam review and we can talk about it then. So, but either way, I don't want you to be ill-treated as he tries to catch up with jet lag and his studies. Okay, so so, what we've established so far is how every idea that human beings have available to them for purposes of trying to understand themselves or to explain phenomena and entities arising in the world of our perceptions, we're now actually in a position, Locke thinks, to conduct natural science. In the course of his work, he established, through his acquisition thesis, a standard for deciding whether any given concept could be employed or used to describe anything in the world of our perceptions. And here he applies a standard. It's built into the acquisition thesis. Remember that thesis says, all ideas are simple, complex, or general, and all complex or general ideas are derived from the processing of simple ideas, right? And when it comes to ideas that pertain to the domain of perception, those originating simple ideas must one and all be simple ideas of sensation. And this actually gives him a criterion for deciding whether any concept can be deployed in describing or trying to explain anything that arises in the world of our perceptions, which is, after all, the primary target zone for scientific explanation. We're interested mostly in explaining why things happen in the world as they do, why the things that we encounter in the world, including other human beings, behave and have the properties that they do. And it turns out that there is that in applying this standard, Locke makes a discovery. He discovers that there are some concepts which have been in use for quite some time by natural scientists and by philosophers, which fail to satisfy the requirements of this standard. That is, he's found some concepts which, as concepts, must be derivable through a process of abstraction from simple ideas of sensation, if they're going to be concepts that we can use to describe anything in the world of our perceptions. And so, for any concept, there's a tool, we now have a tool for trying to decide whether that concept is legitimately deployed when describing the natural world. And that, and the tool simply suggests that for any general idea, which is what a concept is, for that to be legitimately applied to the domain of perception, we have to be able to make plausible that it could be derived through a process of abstraction from simple ideas of sensation. And we've already talked at length about how abstraction works, how you take up what multiple simple ideas of sensation have in common, and then you apply what they have in common in a way that is different from the way that simple ideas of sensation can be deployed. This is, we deploy what they have in common as representing anything, including those simple ideas, but anything else that shares those common features. Right? So here's a concept that, and I'll write this on the board. So here is a concept that we have access to. I'm going to call this lowercase s substance. And last time I told you what this concept refers to. This initially is actually just a complex idea which has the job of representing an individual object. So for example, this pen. It's not general yet because this idea only is a collection of simple ideas that I use to capture what is essential to this pen, what accounts for its existence, but also for the way that it exists. To think back to Descartes, what I'm capturing with a complex idea of this pen are that set of essential features which capture its objective reality, right? Which is the thought of what is essential, what is its way of existing. So its formal reality is captured by the complex idea, which for Locke is a collection of simple ideas of sensation, which I encounter by perceiving this pen. And then I derive each one of those simple ideas from my perceptual observations of the pen, right? But the fact is that Locke knows perfectly well that once you have concepts of properties like color, texture, shape, position in space, once you have these concepts, you don't use simple ideas of sensation anymore. So actually, the complex idea of this pen is actually general, because it's a collection, a combination of concepts of properties. Okay? But the concept of a substance only refers to one thing. Okay? Lowercase s substance. Okay, so this is just a set of, I'm going to just use capital P's to represent Pn as the set of properties, and these are all property concepts, but this particular object is comprised of this set of essential properties, okay? Is this something that we can know on the basis of the acquisition thesis, which tells us what ideas we have access to and which ideas we do not? Do we have access to all the ideas that are referred to in the complex idea of this pen, given the acquisition thesis? Do I have perceptions of things, simple ideas that correspond with the concept of red? Do I have simple ideas corresponding to the primary qualities, that is, the properties that are, you know, that generate in me the idea of its shape, visually and tactily? I do, don't I? Smooth, rough, it's here, not there, position in space. Don't I have ideas of sensation that correspond to all of these features of the pen? Well then, my complex idea of this substance, this individual object, is a legitimate complex idea because I can trace in the actual perception of this object simple ideas of sensation corresponding and underwriting every single concept of a property that I've just deployed in describing it. Right? Now, in order for you to see why I can know this, maybe it would be useful for me to tell you how Locke thinks I know that the red mark, well, no, we don't want to do it that way. The dry marker that dry marker, let's make it even more precise, is red. We've been talking about origins of ideas, but I haven't yet told you how Locke accounts for the truth of a proposition, the truth of an assertion, or the falsity of that assertion. How do we justify claims, which, remember, is the central theme of this course? Everybody from Descartes through Kant is obsessed with establishing a theory that that describes how beliefs, particularly about the natural world, can be justified. So how do you suppose Locke, it's right there in the acquisition thesis, actually, once you realize what a proposition like that dry marker is red consists in? What are its components? How do I build that statement? Yes, sir.
Another set of essential properties of sense perception?
Well, you're thinking about how I come to put together the idea of the complex object, right, the lowercase substance. But I'm asking you how I put together the proposition, the assertion, the belief that I just wrote English words on the board to represent. I could have written it in French, but I'm not going to, you know, show off. Don't need to do that. What does that proposition consist in? Is it just words? Yes?
If the object is modified by a predicate.
Well, it's the object isn't an idea, is it? The idea represents the object, but the object is something in the world, right? But a proposition is not an object. A proposition, a statement, represents, let's just call these judgments or beliefs. These are things that we think about objects. And this captures one thing, or a number of things that we think about this object, okay? And my question really pertains, you're on the right track, but You're presupposing by mentioning predicate something else that we haven't yet, that nobody's quite said yet. A statement like the dry marker is red consists of a series of words, most of which refer to ideas. They express ideas, is one way to put it. And it's the relationship between the ideas and the thing in the world that they represent which will secure the justification for that belief, or will secure for it the discovery that it's not justified. So if I were to say the dry marker is purple, and I'm pointing to this, it's not true, right? That assertion is not justified by the evidence. And what is the evidence? What is the evidence for beliefs based on sense perception? One of the easiest questions I'll ask this semester. And if it's not easy, then I've got more work to do. Which is, you know, that's fine, that's why I do this. I like this work. Yes?
Observation of it.
The perceptions of it. It's the simple ideas of sensation that justify my beliefs about that are based on perceptions. In the end, because the acquisition thesis, according to Locke, secures for us a relationship between the original information coming from perception, which is all we have to go on. And we can't have any ideas about this domain that we, through which, you know, that we think we encounter through the five senses, unless we can locate simple ideas of sensation there, in the immediate content of perceptual awareness. And his theory of how all beliefs based on sense perception are justified can be simplified by, and this is where I think you were going with predicates, the subject predicate. You can characterize any empirical proposition based on sense perception with this sort of rubric, S is P, where S represents the subject of the assertion, and P represents the predicate, and this represents the copula, which P brings the predicate into relation with the subject, right? It's either the relation of identity or it's the relation of predication, which is just a fancy word for this functions as an adjective describing this, right? This says something about a property this has, right? Some feature of the S, okay? This actually captures two kinds of statements, predications as well as identity statements. Right? That too is S is P, but in this case the is the is of identity. And these are just ways that you can combine expressions in most languages in order to express beliefs that we hold. So circling back to here, what makes the dry marker is red true is the same thing that makes this true and makes this in very general terms true. Let me put it to you this way. For any belief that can be expressed this way, the truth of this judgment depends on being able to trace the component ideas back to simple ideas of sensation. And if I can do that for the dry marker, and I can, right, then that idea is legitimate. And if I can do it for the property concept red, by finding something in immediate perceptual awareness that constitutes a simple idea of red, or multiple simple ideas of red, right? There's the one associated with that part of the tip, and this other one, and there's this painting, and then this is red. So I find plenty of simple ideas of sensation that justify my applying that concept to this object. But more importantly, I could derive that concept from what I'm immediately aware of in this object, yes? Because I'm finding simple ideas of sensation of color all over the place here, right? So that one is good too. Am I now done justifying this belief? No, because all I've done so far is to show that the complex idea of the dry marker can be secured by simple ideas of sensation, and the property concept color red is something I can derive, I could have derived by abstraction. It has its proper origins in simple ideas of sensation. So I now have a right to deploy this complex idea of an individual, that dry marker, and the property concept red. I'm allowed to use those because I have the evidence. But can I say of this dry marker that it is red simply because I can derive each of these distinct, this complex idea of a substance and this property concept from this perception? No. What I need is something that puts them together in a single perception. It isn't any good that I can derive the concept of red from other objects. And the fact that I can derive it from this object only helps if I also simultaneously can derive the idea of the dry marker. Okay? So it's the fact that when I say that dry marker is red, I can trace that complex idea back to original simple ideas of sensation in a perception, and I can trace this concept back to also simple ideas of sensation. And what gives this whole thing its ultimate justification is that I can trace what supports combining them together, saying that this and this go together, which is what the copula is doing. I'm predicating the red, you know, a color red of the dry marker. And for that to be justified, I have to find red in the dry marker. I have to find all the simple ideas that support each of these ideas simultaneously present. That's what justifies me in saying that the marker is red, or that red is the red of this dry marker. So now you have a theory of justification for any empirical judgment. Where by empirical judgment, I mean, in this case, empirical judgments about objects of perception. Okay? So, now how is this useful? Well, it's useful because now any scientist can determine whether any descriptive statement, say, based on what you observe in a lab where you're trying to study natural phenomena, is justified or not. Okay? It's now a theory of justification for anything that you learn through perception, anything that can be learned through perception. And so, on this basis, we can now begin to conduct natural science because we can conduct experiments in which we can describe the results of the experiment, and if someone challenges us, we say, do the experiment, perceive it for yourself, and if they do replicate the experiment and their perceptions support our description of the results of the experiment suggested, then we have confirmation. And so we have not just my justification for what I perceive, but we now have something like public justification, right? An agreement among distinct perceivers using a common method of justification. And this now can be used to justify any proposition based on sense perception. All right, so that takes care of how we can come to have the idea of a lowercase s substance, an individual object. But and this is something that I will later ask you about. Can we know substances according to Locke? The answer, if it's this substance, individual, an idea, if the idea of this object is captured by a combination of property concepts that point only to that one object, then that is a substance, lowercase substance, and we can know everything about them. Or at least we can know everything that we ascribe to them, because all the ideas we use to describe them are ideas we got from simple ideas of sensation. Satisfies the acquisition thesis. And therefore, it's not problematic to use the idea. Yes?
So it's kind of like at whatever layer of abstraction you're at, you can justify. Because it's like you can't justify that there's like quartz in the head or whatever.
No, pick the concept of force. Do we ever observe forces? We don't. This is an old problem going all the way back to Locke's period. But we do observe objects. You know, physical objects taking up space, moving around. We can even measure their movements. We can describe accelerations, and then we can run experiments, and we can establish relationships between one set of some properties and other properties of observable objects. And so that it is a tool which will help us to sort between, you might say, theoretical features like forces, the effects of which we observe, but no one actually sees the force itself and sees what it is that makes gravity go. So what we want, though, and where I'm headed now, is the reason I ask you if we can know about these is because there's another concept of substance. And I use the capital S for this one. And this concept is the concept of a substrate. And this concept, Locke says, is a something I know not what. Now, why does he say that? Well, first you need to understand what I mean by a substance. So for every object in this room, according to Aristotelian metaphysics, remember we talked about this at the very beginning, every one of these chairs consists of a combination of matter and form. The form are the properties that we observe in the thing. Its shape, right? And for Aristotle, also its purpose. As a place to sit and write, right? Listen to lectures and so on. Rest your bun, you know, all that. However, Those properties cannot exist free-floating all by themselves. Properties need a place to live. They need a place where they're found. And where they're found, it can't just be this region of space, although that's how Descartes thinks of matter. There has to be something that plays the role of, you might say, being able to receive properties, anchor them. Right? It's a very abstract idea of what it is to be a property here, and it's not easy to see. If you've already taken Dominic or Mitzi Lee's ancient history, then you know what I'm talking about, and you've already been down this road. But if you haven't, you're at a disadvantage. But properties have to... My hands have a shape, but does shape exist all by itself? Doesn't seem so. Only objects that exist can have shape. They don't come into existence. The shape comes into existence with the object, not the other way around. And Aristotle and many other Western thinkers took it that for every property that we can discern through perception, there must be something that, you might say, binds them together so that they belong together in this one object. Because I have a shape, I have texture. According to the six-year-old friend of mine, whenever I've come into their home after a long run out near their home, I invariably have a smell. Apparently her nose is a lot better than mine. And she, don't come over here, Jason. Ooh. So I have all kinds of properties, but those properties could not exist on their own. They need something that they're bound to. It seems reasonable. It seems commonsensical, right? So a general concept was derived from this basic claim that properties can't exist without something in which they reside. And that is what the concept of the substance came to represent. For Locke, it's a substrate. But it's not just any kind of substrate. I mean, a pizza dough has a substrate, flour, right? A little bit of sugar usually, a little bit of oil, some salt, some yeast to make interactions occur. But that's not the substrate that Locke has in mind or that Aristotle had in mind. It's something that's more basic, that essentially does not have any properties of its own. It just has the job of accepting properties. It gives properties a home. And without that home, there's no pizza. Right? That's the thought. Now, this being something that has no properties, just has the capacity to, you might say, receive properties, give properties a home. How can we know about that? Could we have a legitimate concept of this propertyless substrate according to the acquisition thesis? Yeah?
I don't think so, because he's going to perceive it from simple perception, believe.
And there's a clue here in the acquisition thesis that helps us to see that. Any simple idea of sensation is either going to become a concept of a property or it's going to become the concept of a relation. But it's not going to be anything else. So every simple idea of sensation, and those, the family of those is the entire family of genuine information about the world, we are not in a position to have, we can only have ideas that become ideas of properties or relations, because our original information comes in that form. But the very idea of a capital S substance is something that has no properties. It just, you might say, plays this functional role of being, you know, the home, as I've said, for these properties. And so according to Locke's acquisition thesis, I could have no concept of that. And this worries Locke. Locke thinks he's made a discovery, an unfortunate discovery, because it seems that we do think that there's something that holds all of the properties of this pen together. They don't wander off, right? The shape doesn't keep changing. If it does, then it's not, it's a changeable thing. It's not a, and maybe it's not identical over, self-identical over time. This can't change its properties in any of its essential properties at all, can it, and remain this pen? The role of substance in giving property the place to reside may seem too abstract for you to see why it's important. But surely all of you expect that the loaf of bread you left in the refrigerator half finished, right, with more slices yet to go, you assume is the same bread that you left the last time you had a sandwich, made a sandwich with that bread, right? You take it that that's the same bread. Well, what makes it the same bread? It better have all the same properties that it had before you wrapped it up and put it back in the fridge. This is why we're disappointed when we go back in there 6 weeks later, because we've been eating out all the time, and now we have bread that formerly was brown and now is green or blue-green and smells different and doesn't taste the same and maybe isn't even safe to eat. Is that the same loaf of bread? No. If you tried to sell that, you know, the lawsuit would stipulate that this isn't what you said you sold to me. You sold me something else. So do you see how for this to be the same pen that I put in my backpack 4 days ago, I need it. I need its properties, its essential properties, to stay the same. This is a part of what makes it self-identical. This is what makes it an individual object. If you lose any of your essential properties, you cease being who you are, right? Yeah.
Wouldn't it be like, even if the properties of something change, wouldn't it be the same thing? Because like the kind of substratum is still there and it's still there.
Watch somebody doing ancient metaphysics. You just did what Aristotle did when he discovered that for any set of properties, there has to be a home for them. And that's what you're leaning on. Right? There's got to be something that stays the same. And even, yes, properties do change. One of the things that substance, this idea that everything consists of a combination of a matter and a form, is that it allows us to account for change. And you're absolutely right that something, things must be capable of change. I mean, this pen is going to eventually dry out. Okay? But at the point when it's no longer useful as a pen, it ceases to actually be the pen I bought. It's now a degraded version of the pen, minimally, and it can't be used as a pen anymore, in which case, it's not really the pen that I bought. That's why we replace it. It's worn out, right? It hasn't ceased to exist, but it isn't the same thing anymore. Too many things have changed. It can't be the case that if, here's another way to see this. Can this change in some of its properties without ceasing to be what it is? Sure. So when I said essential properties, I meant it. And an essential property is a property that this thing cannot lose. And frankly, since this is an artifact, it is essentially, in part, capable of allowing me to use it to perform a function. A chair I can't sit in is not any longer a chair. A pen I can't write with, right? What do we call a pen you can't write with? Useless. But a pen exists for a use. It's still an object, it's just not a pen anymore. Yes?
So, would that go for, like, people, too? Like, if somebody,
absolutely,
like, gets a haircut or something?
Well, okay. Now, I know there are some people who are sort of fashion forward and who take things like haircuts extremely seriously. But philosophy in the West isn't among that community. We don't think that when you change your hair color, you've changed something essential. You're the same woman, right? So those are not essential properties. But if you're no longer a creature with a heart, now it's coming. Yes, life and death has a way of bringing these things. Yeah, you can lose a lot of things, but if you lose both kidneys and you don't have access to a dialysis machine, then you are shortly not at all. Yeah.
Oh.
And then
so
that.
Basically, like, it's like something like a pen has, like, it has the simple purpose of being able to write, and so, and maybe it has, like, a color, so it's like a simple object, but like a human is, like, much more complicated.
It's a complex object,
so
yes.
Our
the functional properties
are much
of it.
More complicated.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. So what counts as the essential properties of a living thing involve a lot more. It's a longer list. Yeah. And the essential properties for an artifact are, it's a shorter list, absolutely. So we've got different kinds of things in the world. The upshot here is just that if you're going to account for the continued existence of something as self-same, as self-identical over time, some things have to stay the same. Some things can change, but some things have to stay the same. Aristotle called those things like your hair color, your haircut, you know, the kind of cut or the lack of a cut, it would be accidental properties. Things that come and go and which allow for change that is of a moderate kind. But radical change seems to undermine the identity of the thing that changed. Okay? And so if you think of radical changes, you're starting to think in terms of losing of properties that are essential to you. But whatever these properties are, and whether they're accidental or essential, you need these properties need a place to reside in order for us to even think about these distinctions between essential properties and inessential ones. We have to have an object. And Aristotle and thinkers, including Locke, think, when I think of this pen, I think of a certain combination of properties which I expect to persist in time. So that when I reach into my backpack to pull this out again, it's not going to start drawing purple lines on the board, right? It's not going to start writing from inside the cap, right? I won't, you know, like something won't come growing out of it. It's going to function the same way it did before. It's going to have all the same features. It's not going to have a different shape and so on. And if I find that it's changed in these ways, I'm going to wonder what happened, right? And in order to have a concept that seems, you know, consistent with the fact that we take certain collections of properties to be identifying of a particular object, there has to be something that binds them together. This is the idea. This is a particular set of essential properties. A living thing has another wider set of them, and they all have to be in place. Creature with a kidney, creature with a heart, creature with a liver, creature with an intestinal tract, you know, creature with a nervous system, depending on the living thing, and so on, right? You need all of these things. So, what makes it possible for properties to hang out together seems to require, many thinkers in the West have thought, something functioning as a substance, a binder, if you like. Something that holds them together, or a home for them to reside. And Locke's view is that the idea that all the properties of this pen continue to hang out together is something that is not secured by anything that I literally perceive as a substrate. But the traditional metaphysical idea of a substance, a propertyless substrate, what Aristotle called matter, pure matter, or prime matter, is actually just something that we derive from a contingent fact about each encounter that we have with an object of perception in which they all, that those self-same properties seem to be gathered together in the same way as they were the last time we encountered the object. And that persistence of that collection, we don't actually perceive the collection. We perceive that we seem to find them together when we go looking. But we never actually perceive their collectiveness. They seem to nonetheless be coordinated with each other. And in order to see this part, you have to understand that for Locke, my concept of this table is an aggregation of distinct perceptual encounters with the table, no one of which gives me the three-dimensional shape which I nonetheless derive from or abstract from multiple experiences of walking around this table and looking at it. So I don't observe, in other words, all of the properties of the pen at all times, so I don't actually observe their collectedness. If I saw them all together, I could say, well, I see that the red and the white are together here in space. But the red and the white on the other side, I'm not observing together in space right now, am I? I only observe some of the properties at a given moment and not others. And so it must be something about how I tend to associate these with each other. I take it that they hang out together, and I don't have any experiences that suggest otherwise. When I turn the pen, it doesn't suddenly change colors. When I turn it or put it away and then bring it out again, it still has the same shape. It's that consistency which we take to be evidence. We take as evidence that there is a collection, but we never observe the actual collection collected in a way that would support even the concept of a collection as a set of necessary relations among distinct entities which we've encountered in perception. The upshot of all of this is that Locke thinks he's discovered that the concept of a substrate, a substance, a home for properties of an object that is persisting and self-identical over time, is a something we know not what, and therefore is not a legitimate concept in thinking about the domain of perception. But that means that we have to find another way to account for the identity of the pen over time. And worse, and that's where we're headed on Wednesday, we need something that will establish the continued self-identity of persons, personal identity over time, because we don't perceive everything even about ourselves. What he means by a person is a mind. What you think is captured by what you take to be yourself, right, from the Cartesian perspective, from your conscious awareness of your own mental states. It's different from your body. I'll explain next time why the concept of a person is not the concept of a human being. It's a part of a human being. It's the part associated with the human mind, not the human brain. And Locke thinks that while the brain might be the source and cause of the mind, the identity of the brain doesn't establish the identity of the mind, and I'll give you a counterexample if you think that it does when we get together next time. Okay? All right. Yes, you had a question.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think that, I guess,
the pen is nothing more than its property. And sorry? Well, here's the thing. We assume that there must be a substrate because we think that they belong together. But all we have by way of an idea that is earned through perception is a rough idea that they are part of the collection, but we actually, that idea is a result of a habit of mind. We have the habit of associating all the processes with each other, but we don't ever perceive all of them together, so we don't actually have in a single perception something that supports the idea of the collection. But he thinks that collection, as long as nothing, as long as your impression that they have belong together is not undermined by later experience.
How about you?
Then your subjective experience that they belong together is enough for you to say this is the same pen.
That's
yeah.
I'm just wondering if you're trying to say.
for a while.
Oh, yeah, right. I should be free, actually, just Wednesday. Either I can do before class or just your extra hours Wednesday. So.
Oh, you can't do it right after.
Not right after. I have a class that starts right now.
Okay. Yeah. If you can send me an email before class on Wednesday, I'll come early.
Come early? All right.
Got okay. You. No worries. And we'll just meet here?
Yeah, just in the class.
Yeah, yeah. Good.
Just a question about the substance.
Yeah.
The other factor. So, that probably its existence is